The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show rolls on here on a Thursday. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. King will be back in the big seat coming up tomorrow. Thank you for being with us, and of course, there's always news. You just never know exactly where it's going to come from, but there's always news in the college football world. And one of the more interesting pieces of news earlier this week was the word that Caden Proctor, who of course left Alabama after being the starter at left tackle last year, is likely to return to Alabama, although that's not signed, sealed, and delivered because he can't get into the portal for about another month. We said, let's check in on the reaction to that, as well as how things are going with Kalen DeBoer and spring football, with someone who talked to Kalen DeBoer extensively yesterday. That's Ryan Fowler from Tide 100.9 in Tuscaloosa. He joins us right now here on the Duncan Newsmaker line on the Chuck Oliver Show, and he's our Truist reporter. Ryan, how are you?
Hey, good. I'm having a great day. It's the last 45 days, 60 days, I feel like I'm more of an investigator than I am an analyst. I'm trying to find out all these different informations around, you know, Kalen DeBoer's offense, the process, the system, the messages that he's getting out and recruiting. He's really stepped into a pretty dominant role, but I know a lot of people kind of question his recruiting. And I don't know, after a few weeks here of locking up that 2024 class and then also adding some more pieces through the transfer portal in this new 2025 class, there's not many things that to left to question other than, win losses. And we haven't got to that point yet.
Let's talk about the Proctor thing first, and I want to get into some of what you talked about with Kalen DeBoer yesterday. But when did you first hear, all right, this might be a thing, and then what's your reaction to what he will bring, just the on-field side of things? What does it do for them, given what they were looking at tackle to get him back?
Yeah, okay, so let's go through the Kalen Proctor situation. I know it's going to be, people are going to look at me and they're going to say, you know what? He's from Tuscaloosa. He covers the University of Alabama. Obviously, he's going to take up for them. But let me criticize the system. When I look at it on the surface, it identifies that we have problems in our system. The system that we operate in is broken. And these are moments that's probably going to grab a lot of attention. When you put the word ALABAMA in front of it and you tie it together, you go, hold on a minute, player leaves Alabama, goes to Iowa, comes back to Alabama, then that's an eye-opening moment for those who were not fully engaged on this, hey, what can we do to help college football from NIL? So I have to look at it and I say, man, I can't stand it. It just, there's a lot of things that just bothers me about it. But then I also have to remind myself that Iowa was also called cheating. They were trying to recruit Caden Proctor back to Iowa throughout the season here. They self-reported that allegation when you look at Iowa. We don't know what was told, because something was telling me, like, hey, if they're recruiting, if they're trying to bring him in, what type of package are they trying to offer him? How much are they trying to offer him? Is that something that, was really discussed? I would say in this current time and structure, if you're going to go get a guy that has that type of potential, you didn't get him for a Snickers bar and a Coke. I'm not that dumb. So when you think about it, the system, it was, let's go recruit. We got him here. But the simple thing is, he was at a place like Alabama, and he went to a place like Iowa. That's a big changeover. And you don't even have to use the word Alabama. You could probably use any of the schools in the SEC. At a place like Georgia, he's there. He's treated the attention to detail, the strength conditioning, the nutrition. He goes to Iowa, it's daylight and dark. They just don't have the budgets that these Southern schools have. Not saying they're poor. But the system is just not there for him to excel as a player. He says, you know what? That green grass on that septic tank, it just doesn't taste as good. I'm going back over here. And I think that's what he did. I don't think it's any more, any less. But it's almost to me, I look at the broken system. Yeah, we could blame Caden Proctor for being indecisive and, you know, this young man. But he's also getting pulled in a lot of different directions. Nick Saban's retiring. The money's out there. We don't know if they're trying to fill up his checking account or buy him a new car. Or maybe he needs a new car. It's one of those that you see tampering, you see cheating. I think a lot of people forget about. But Iowa was kind of caught with their hand in the cookie jar.
On field, they were pretty thin at the tackle. They like where they are in the interior line, but they were pretty thin at tackle. He's not going to be able to be there for spring, so that might be somewhat of an issue as you try and implement a new system. But how big is just landing that human being back in the tackle spot, presumably as a starter? How much does that change the equation for them?
Well, think about where we were at just a couple of weeks ago, and we started going through spring practice. I went out and I wrote down things that I thought Alabama needed to find an answer for, and it was not just one tackle, it was both tackles. Well, this eliminates that question. Kalen DeBoer on my show yesterday eliminated the quarterback question because, I mean, he pretty much shut it down. I mean, it's Jalen Milroe. He's taken all the first-team reps. Right now, he's the guy. In other words, it sounded like it would take a lot for him to lose that job. We thought, okay, there might be somewhat of a competition, you know, in this, you know, this quarterback room. It's deep. So going back to the tackle situation, it answers a big question because now, instead of having to fire your guys up, you have now a big competition at right tackle. Because we just assume that Caden Proctor is going to be able to lose a few pounds. My understanding is that he's already lost a few pounds and he's on his way to dropping even more weight. He's got that left tackle spot. Now you take Miles McVay, you take Wilkin Formby, and you also take Elijah Pritchard was playing at left, by the way. He was in the transfer portal, too, and pulled out, came back. So now you've got Elijah Pritchard there and battling for that right tackle spot. So it really helps your football team more than just that one position. It gives you a chance to move some guys and make a unit because the two big questions that I had was those, and we can get place kicker another day, but that was also another one because, you know, you go out to pro day and you see Will Reichman kicking, you're like, how is Alabama going to replace that? Because he bailed Alabama out a ton over the last 5 years.
Ryan Fowler's with us here on the Chuck Oliver Show. He's afternoons on Tide 100.9 out of Tuscaloosa. So, Ryan, I'm curious about the DeBoer interactions with you guys because a lot of us will see him, interact with him for the first time at Media Days coming up in July. I know that by reputation, he is a more open guy than Nick Saban because almost anybody would be a more open guy than Nick Saban and how he runs things at his program historically. So I'm curious, based on what you found out about him from talking to people, you know, Washington and his other stops, how much of what you guys are getting in Tuscaloosa right now is what you think you'll be getting, say, in 18 months, and how much of it is, hey, I'm the new guy, and I'm almost running for office to convince people that weren't familiar with me they should be comfortable with me as the Alabama coach?
Yeah, I think that's some of it. But, you know, when you look at relations, and I can only speak for my relationship that I've started to build, you know, with Kalen DeBoer. You know, he is a guy that I can reach out to, send a text message to, and he responds. I mean, I know that sounds weird in this 2024 business that we live in, but he's one of those coaches that, you know, first couple of weeks that he was here, I heard from him. And, you know, he said, you know, I'd love to be on your show. And I got him on the show a couple of times, got his assistant coaches on the show a couple of times. And, you know, I'm very thankful. You know, listen, Nick Saban was fun to cover in a different way. He was a quote guy. But as far as the access that it looks like Kalen DeBoer is going to be able to provide, I think it's going to be great for his program. Because he's going to be able to sell it to the fans. You know, he can come on your show and he can reach, you know, that audience that you have. He can come on my show and reach the audience. I just think the media access, now at some point, he is going to have to pull some of it back. And I think that really is what, I guess, as a reporter, you don't want to be a part of the cut, right? You want to be able to make the cut. And so, you know, when you look at Kalen DeBoer, we featured him twice. I think first time was 22 minutes. And it doesn't seem like he was wanting to get off the phone. I mean, you know, you've interviewed people, and you've got one of those quality guys. You got to keep going. You got to keep going with those questions. And as long as he's engaged, as long as there's not a time that he said, I got to get off by this certain time, then you do it. I mean, he talked 19 minutes yesterday. So you kind of look at Kalen DeBoer and the access that we're given. It's daylight and dark compared to what it was. But now, listen, Nick Saban was fun to cover, but it was just a different cover, right? You covered him from a press room, not from a one-on-one exclusive interview.
Ryan Fowler, he's our Truist reporter on Alabama Today. He joins us here on the Chuck Oliver Show from Tide 100.9. A couple more minutes with him. Ryan, you guys have had access to practice. Before, if we were talking about spring practice, it would have been, well, this is what Coach Saban said, and maybe, you know, this is what I've heard. But you guys have actually gotten access to practice. So with what you've seen so far, what stands out?
The efficiency that they practice at. It reminds me a lot of Coach Fran. I was here when Coach Fran was the guy for a couple of years. And the way that he practiced was there was no wasting time. It's one of those most efficient. I think you see that a lot of these fastball, you know, up-tempo teams, right? They want to practice fast where they can play fast. It just seems like they accomplish a lot. Coach Saban was a more physical type style practice. And this one's a little bit different. It just feels different, but it's more about the efficiency. It's, you know, it's having multiple field goal units go up. And so, you know, when they go through a field goal unit, they kick one and they have another one kick it. I mean, literally you're having three field goal reps in less than 40 seconds. It's kick, kick, kick. And then we're going back to the first kick, kick. It's just the amount of stuff that they're getting done. The music is playing. That one's a little bit unique, right? That's something that may or may not have been, you know, at the SEC because it wasn't here. Nick Saban, no music. But here, it's music. So it's like a high energy. I mean, it gets you all fired up. Even as a reporter, man, you go out there and you hear that stuff, you're feeling like, hey, man, I can break this segment. I can do this. I can do that. Because it does. It fires you up. It takes you to another energy level. So I think that's my big takeaway is just the amount of energy of practice and how efficient they are at getting the things that they need to get done.
Is there any position where it's obvious that when April 15th rolls around, portal opens up, they're going to start doing some things, try to look for it? And I'm sure there might be individual guys that present themselves that they just jump on regardless, but any areas of need where it's pretty obvious they're going to be portal hunting?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got to go get the corners. I think you've got to go get some corners. In the system, the 4-2-5, you better be able to have, I think if you look down through that roster, I think they've got five corners that are on that roster. I think that's where you got to look at. So defensive back, I think you feel okay at safety. Still would probably like to have some numbers. And, you know, the one thing that you kind of look at is Alabama's got a surplus of defensive tackles. I think they've got 11 defensive tackles. You almost wonder if there might be some guys there that, you know, would go the other way. Because Alabama's very close on numbers right now. You know, even though the national narrative was that they had lost everybody and there wasn't going to be enough to play football, you know, against Western Kentucky in the fall. But that's not really the case because when you start looking at scholarship numbers, I think they're one short right now. You add Caden Proctor back to that. I don't know if it puts it one over or one just exactly, but you kind of look at that number that they're going to have to probably – and I think there will be. I think we're about to see something in this transfer portal window that's going to open up. I think there's been other people that have teased it, but just back up and look at the NCAA. They told us a few weeks ago they were not going to investigate new cases based on the collective and the transfer portal. They're not going to open any new ones, or they're not going to continue any like Tennessee. Like Tennessee was cheating. We all know that. Tennessee was cheating. But the NCAA chose not to fulfill their responsibility. So Tennessee, you take that victory lap. Go ahead. You deserve it. But at the end of the day, this is the system that we talked about with Caden Proctor. This thing's broke. They can't even enforce their rules. And when they went out and said, hey, guys, go ahead and go 90. Our radar gun is broke. We can't ride tickets anyway. Can you imagine what this portal entry, this window is about to be? There may be players that we didn't even think about going to the portal because they're going to get that tampering, and you're going to hear from a lot of coaches because the NCAA, they're not going to investigate any new things based on this.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's a lot of talk out there that things could get real lively come April 15th. And whatever happens, man, we'll be talking about all of it right here on the Chuck Oliver Show. And I know you'll be busy chewing on it on Tide 100.9 in Tuscaloosa. Ryan Fowler, you can hear him in the afternoons there in Tuscaloosa. Appreciate you being with us, man.
Hey, you are more than welcome. And appreciate the partnership we have with the Chuck Oliver Show here on Tide 100.9. I'll see you guys this afternoon. Thank you again.
There you go. Ryan Fowler checking in is, again, never a dull moment for sure right now. And Tuscaloosa, one of the areas people are going to be particularly intrigued by with everything going on in the transition to Kalen DeBoer. All right, so the transition also is underway for the SEC to the new world of having Texas and Oklahoma in the conference. They haven't figured out yet what they want to do long term about the schedule. But yesterday, we did get an answer on what they're doing for 2025. It's kind of, I think, logical, but at the same time, a little disappointing. We'll explain coming up here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Southern Sports Today, rolling on. It is the Chuck Oliver Show. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. King will be back tomorrow. And I'm sure he'll have some thoughts on some things that we talk on today, including the word that came down yesterday afternoon about the SEC and their schedule for 2025. Long term, is the SEC going to go to 9 conference games? At one point, it seemed like it was kind of a sure thing, and then it's become less so. And a big part of it is you've got a lot of schools in the SEC saying, well, if we're going to do that, how about some more money? Why give ESPN a 9th conference game, which the conference games are going to be more desirable than the games that they would replace on the schedule that are typically the one-way bye games where, you know, best case scenario, it's somebody who's at least an okay team coming to town. But sometimes it's an FCS team. Sometimes it's just the dregs of FBS. Although, you never know, if you're Auburn, you bring New Mexico State to town, you get a surprise. It can happen, but more often than not, those games are not super appealing games. And so the idea is, well, if we're going to give you more appealing games, how about a little something for the effort? Except for, so far, ESPN has not been in any particular hurry to do that. It's no secret that ESPN's finances have not been as free-flowing as they were 10 or 12 years ago. And they've got the conference under contract regardless. If you didn't build something in that says if we go to 9, then this is how we get paid, then asking them to do it just out of the goodness of their heart so far has not been a winning strategy. So since there is no way to get a long-term deal done because some of these schools will not vote for 9 until they know they're going to get a financial benefit from it, then at the moment the SEC just said, yeah, you know what, we'll just keep it at 8 for 2025. And we're going to announce the schedule right now. And this is the part that to me is a little disappointing. The excitement of the new teams in the conference, Texas and Oklahoma, that for anybody that's playing one of them, that adds something to it. That adds a little juice. Hey, you know, we're going to get a crack at a team we don't normally see on our schedule. It'll be the first time we get a chance to make a trip to this place. That'll be kind of fun. Well, for 2025, the SEC said, we're just going to play the exact same schedules, just flip them. So if you are, for example, Georgia, rather than getting a look at Oklahoma in 2025, you're going to still find yourself playing against Texas again. Just this time you get Texas coming to you. So Georgia in 2025 has Alabama, Kentucky, Ole Miss, and Texas coming to them, and they go to Auburn, Mississippi State, and Tennessee, along with the game in Jacksonville for Florida. That means if you're a school like a South Carolina, that when they got their schedule for 2025 said, or 2024 said, okay, pretty much every game our fans are passionate about in conference is gone. Florida's gone. Georgia's gone. Tennessee's gone. Like, all these games are the games that are kind of the ones that have been the signature games on the schedule. They're all gone. And instead, it's like we're in the SEC West. We got Bama. We got LSU. We still got Texas A&M. We got Ole Miss. We don't have any of these teams that our fans are kind of used to seeing, except for Kentucky and Vanderbilt. Well, if you're South Carolina, again, you've got Alabama, Kentucky, Oklahoma, and Vanderbilt coming to you. And you got to go to Baton Rouge, Oxford, Columbia, the other Columbia, and College Station. I think there's some people that are probably like, geez, so we don't get to see Texas for another year. And we also don't get to see we don't get to see any of the familiar faces at all. Like, we're going to be 2 years not playing Georgia. We're a couple hours away on the freeway and we can't play Georgia? Really? It's just a little bit of a letdown, I think, for some programs on games like that. And look, Georgia, the fact that Georgia hadn't played in College Station ever was a subject of conversation in this conference for years. And here we are, we're going to continue to have another year where Georgia not only isn't playing Texas A&M, they're not playing in the conference. I mean, or they're not playing in their stadium. Like, how is it possible that A&M will have been in this conference since 2014 and Georgia will have never gone to College Station? It's not a great look. So I understand why they're doing it. There's always the issues about, oh, what's fair, what's not fair, rather than spend another year trying to project and guess what's fair based on 2025. They had a formula that they said they used to pick the 2024 matchups. They're just going to flip them, and everybody's doing that. So hopefully in 26, some of these games we're not getting right now, they'll make an effort to get them. But again, if you go to 9 games, you're going to need to try and balance that schedule again for fairness. What are we talking about? Are we talking about any kind of pod system? Are we going to have one permanent opponent? Are we going to have 3 permanent opponents? There's so many things to figure out. Who knows, man? Georgia might not get to College Station for another 3 to 5 years. All the way around, it's just taking some of the things that are the better stuff in college football and putting it to the side in the name of just short term. Let's just get through this and do the best we can. And I don't love that. Also, one quick note, by the way, since I mentioned South Carolina, yesterday, a familiar name from the SEC popped back up at South Carolina. Mike Shula is back in college coaching. Shula is going to be one of these guys who's, again, a behind the scenes person. But he's going to be at South Carolina as an analyst for this year. And that's just kind of interesting because obviously Shula's been in the NFL for most of the last couple of decades. You're talking about a guy. Shula is a really good quarterback coach. I never thought he had any business being a head coach. And I didn't even like him as an offensive coordinator. When he was in the pros, I'm a Tampa Bay Bucs fan. Trust me, I watched a lot of Mike Shula's offensive coordinator. I didn't like it so much. But he is a good quarterback developer. And at South Carolina, a place that has a quarterback in year 2, but a guy who has not played yet in any meaningful situations, really, in Lenoris Sellers, having a guy like Mike Shula there to help the staff try and bring him along could be a really good thing for Lenoris Sellers' development. I doubt Shula will be there more than 1 year. These guys that take these kind of jobs normally are not. It's just sort of, hey, I want to be involved. I want to be around a program doing something. So I doubt Shula will be a long-term force in development for Lenoris Sellers. But in the short term, if they're not letting him game plan, if they're just letting him work with the quarterback, that's a move that I think could actually turn out to be pretty darn good.
It's always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
College football, Chuck Oliver on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver's show continues. Heath Klein in for Chuck today, and we head over to Athens right now, where the Dogs are doing their thing for spring. Not a ton of drama over there compared to some of the programs in the SEC, but plenty of interesting stuff going on nonetheless. Jed May is covering all of it for UGASports.com. He's our Truist reporter on Georgia, and he joins us right now here on the Dunkin' Donuts Newsmaker line. Jed, how are you?
Doing good, man. Sat down for lunch. It's first day of NCAA tournament, so I got that on a TV, and can't ask for much more on a beautiful day in Athens.
I'm curious for you. I know you wrote about Oscar Delp. This is one of the stories that I do think is interesting, just because Brock Bowers, I mean, we're seeing people talk about him leading up to the draft. Bowers was just perceived as such a unique unicorn-level talent with what he showed there. I don't know if Oscar Delp is that guy, but at the same time, there's no reason Delp couldn't be a major impact player for them at tight end, right?
Right, yeah. I think nobody can be Brock Bowers because, like you said, he is a unicorn. And Kirby Smart said that the other day. He doesn't try to be Brock Bowers. He doesn't have to be Brock Bowers. But like you said, he can still be a very good part of this offense. He's shown flashes at points. He obviously stepped up when Brock was hurt last year. So he said he's focused on, some technical things, trying to be more solid with his hands, improving in run blocking, those kind of things. But I think he's got to be the leader. Brock has said in interviews many times he wants to set the example for all the tight ends. He wants to, be the first one in, last one out, that kind of stuff. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how Oscar kind of takes on that role. And, all indications are he's doing a pretty good job of it so far.
I'm curious, Carson Beck, Lord knows there's been enough conversation about Carson Beck's car, so we don't need to get into that. But how is Carson Beck, talking about being a leader, different now when it's clearly his team as opposed to last year where the perception was, hey, he's probably the guy, but there's a competition going on here?
Yeah, well, he said it when he came up and talked to us last week. He said, yeah, I've done it now. Guys respect me more now that I've gone out and, won a road game at Auburn, played an SEC championship, won an Orange Bowl. Beating Tennessee and Knoxville. He has a different level of cachet with his teammates. Now, like you said, last year, he was thought to be the guy, but it was, like you said, it was still a competition. He hadn't gotten a whole lot of game experience yet. So I think now his confidence is higher, and I think his teammates' confidence in him is even higher, too, just knowing, he took them to the doorstep of a 13-0 record and a spot in the college football playoff last year, so there's no reason he can't do it again.
Jed May with us here on the Chuck Oliver Show looking at Georgia. Jed, they haven't lost coordinators of significance. Muschamp had the co-title, but Schumann's obviously kind of the lead dog there along with Kirby Smart, who's really, really the lead dog defensively. So there hasn't been massive disruption in the lead, but there have been some guys like Adel McGee who gets a head coaching job, some guys who are assistants behind the scene go with him. Is there anything that you look at among the personnel losses in the staff that seems disruptive enough to matter?
I guess it depends on what your definition of matter is. I think they're still going to be very good, especially defensively, because Kirby Smart's fingerprints obviously are all over. Will Muschamp is still in Athens as an analyst, so he isn't gone. I think it's going to be interesting to see how things change in recruiting, because Travaris Robinson has a reputation as a great recruiter coming from Alabama. Dante Williams is a West Coast guy, so he's got his tentacles out there. And then Josh Crawford is a guy who's coached all over the state of Georgia, has connections maybe not on Del McGee's level, but pretty close. And he's a guy that Kirby Smart said they've had on the radar for a long time. And they interviewed him for the receivers coach position to end up hiring as running backs coach. And then James Coley obviously has coached in Athens before, has so many South Florida connections. So every guy they brought in has his own, I guess, footprint maybe, or recruiting prowess that he's good at. And it's going to be interesting to see how that formula kind of works together to keep these number one, number two recruiting classes keep rolling in Athens.
From what you know so far of what they've been doing in the spring, I don't know how much access you get day in, day out, what they let you do and what they don't. But anybody in particular that stood out to you as having made a step forward so far?
Step forward. I mean, Colby Young, the transfer from Miami, I don't know. Again, we don't get to see a ton of practice, but just physically, like, this receiver room is a room full of first off the bus guys. I mean, Colby Young is huge. Tyler Williams is huge. Michael Jackson is big. Dylan Bell isn't necessarily tall, but he is jacked. Like, you've got a room full of impressive guys in that receiver room. Carson Beck looks great. Defensively, it's going to be interesting to see how things mix and match back there in the secondary. I think this is when a lot of that cross-training stuff that they talk about starts to happen, especially with guys in their second year of the program, like a Janelle Aguero, for example. So who starts at safety next to Malachi Starks? Who takes over for Tyke Smith at star? All those things are kind of being worked out right now. But as far as what we've seen, this is a team that – just if you line them up 1 through 85 and just look at them, they're as physically impressive as a group as you're going to find in the country.
Yeah, what you mentioned there with Colby, that's a guy that you look at, people have compared to Lawrence Cager as just a guy that maybe they haven't had that type of player physically. Not saying that he and Cager are the same guy, but just a little bit different in his build than anything they've had for a while now at receiver there.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him. We got to see practice on Tuesday, and I was like, oh, cool. They've got a tight end working with the receivers. I'm like, oh, no, it's Colby Young. I mean, he is I try to picture a 5'11", 185-pound corner trying to get around that guy on a receiver screen, toss, sweep, whatever, and it seems like an impossible task. So, you know, you think of a package with him and Dylan Bell on the outside, obviously good receivers, and they will block their tails off too. So I think they give you a lot of – and we hadn't even mentioned London Humphreys yet, who's a guy who obviously ripped off a long touchdown against Georgia with Vanderbilt last year. So the transfer guys are – they're still coming along, figuring out how things work in Athens, but all three of those guys are different skill sets, but skill sets that definitely complement the guys who are already in the room.
Yeah, we didn't really ever see the full version of Ladd McConkey, it felt like, last year because of the injuries.
Right.
You hear the way the pro scouts are just raving about him and about his potential and whatnot. I don't know. Is there anybody who can really be what a prime McConkey would have been for last year's team? And if so, you know, Humphrey seems to be the guy people draw a comparison, but I don't know if that's completely fair.
Yeah, he's a little bit more. I mean, and granted, I don't know a ton about him other than when I saw him streaking down the middle of the field on a 50-yard post route last year. But I think if you're looking for the dependable go-to third down guy, I think Dylan Bell could be that guy because he's a good receiver. He's very strong. He's very good at making contested catches. And I think especially when you get into the meat of the schedule, you're not – I mean, it's kind of like the NFL. You're not going to be throwing into wide open windows all the time. So you need a guy who can box out defenders, can make catches as he's being tackled, as he's being taken to the ground. Dylan Bell showed that kind of in the back half of the schedule last year. And I think he could be that guy to grow into the go-to target, the guy that Carson Beck looks to on every third and six.
Kirby Smart has shown he's not just going to go willy-nilly into the portal because he doesn't need to with the kind of talent that they recruit there, but where he selectively needs to shop to add a little depth or whatnot, he'll do that. And sometimes it's not the obvious place. I think a lot of people, for example, when they grabbed JT Daniels, were like, what? Why are you adding him? So it's not always obvious where he's going. Are there any spots, though, that you could kind of tell already in camp, yeah, that's a place maybe come April 15th, they say, we could use another one of those?
Nowhere obvious really comes to mind. I think, you know, they obviously tried to add Caleb Downs from Alabama, and I think that could be one where I think they're comfortable with what they have. They added Jake Pope also from Alabama. I think if a proven safety came available, they would explore that. I think corner, they're probably fine. Inside linebacker, they're probably fine. That room is very talented, but just not a ton of in-game experience. But I think they'd be fine there. I mean, maybe a proven defensive lineman, and they added one already, an Xavier McLeod. Maybe another guy there. But like you said, they addressed a lot of those needs kind of in the spring portal window. So I think if I had to pick one area, I would keep an eye on safety/star, and if there was a experienced, talented guy, a perfect fit type, I think they might explore that avenue.
Last couple of minutes here with Jed May. Jed, I talked about it earlier. It was unusual, real unusual, frankly, that a guy like Brock Vandegrift, with his build-up that he had coming in and his physical ability, hung around there as long as he did, knowing pretty good chance he wasn't going to be the starter. Gunnar Stockton obviously would seem like a guy who could start in 2025, but is there any chance at all after spring that maybe if somebody comes sniffing around that he's interested, or do you think he's just absolutely for sure in Athens in 24?
I think he is for sure in Athens in 24. I will be very interested to see what happens next spring, because obviously you'll have Gunnar, you'll have Ryan Puglisio they signed in the 24 class. I mean, theoretically, you could have whatever freshman quarterback you sign in 25 on campus as well, though, you know, obviously it's tough to start as a true freshman. But, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked to see them explore the portal next spring, because with Gunnar Stockton, I mean, obviously we don't know a ton about him. We saw him play the second half of the Orange Bowl, and he led a couple touchdown drives, but there were also moments where there was some inaccuracy even on passes that were caught. And it's not really fair to judge him on one half of action against the Florida State team that was depleted. But you do wonder if the staff thinks, yeah, this is a prime succession plan, I guess. So I do think Gunner will be here in the fall. Next, I would guess he is probably here through next spring and maybe in the next fall, but that would be very interesting to see what portal options could come open and how seriously Georgia would look at that.
Jed May, you can check his work out, UGASports.com. That's a Rivals thing. He's been our truest reporter today here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Jed, thanks for making the time, man.
Absolutely, anytime.
There you go. There's the word from over in Athens. And again, when you don't even have a couple of things that spring to mind when you need to go look for possible help after spring wraps up, there's a reason that Georgia's going to be the consensus number one when all the different polls, magazines, you name it, when it comes out, they just are super well situated. Doesn't mean they can't fail to live up to that standard, but they are super well situated to at least start the year with people saying, yeah, no reason anybody else should be at the top spot when we get going. All right, it is the Chuck Oliver Show, and coming up, I want to revisit a quote. It's not a quote from the last week, but it's just a reminder. Even as there's a lot going on around the sport that we all care about, we tend to sometimes overreact and think that things are bigger crises than they are. One way or the other, I suspect the ones we're dealing with now shall pass too. We'll explain coming up here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
To the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Jalen's got, you know, multiple pieces to his game that he just can really excel at. And so, we have some great ones in the room. Jalen's certainly, been headlining that room and doing a great job there. Taking in the offense, leading. He's done a great job in all facets.
That is Kalen DeBoer talking about Jalen Milroe in conversation with our man Ryan Fowler on Tide 100.9 earlier in the week, and talking about Milroe establishing himself as the guy at the quarterback spot. So we'll see. We'll see what Milroe looks like in that offense. Going to be one of the things that's interesting to keep an eye on coming up this year, because Milroe showed some good things, but at the same time, he's not necessarily shown the kind of accuracy that you saw from a Michael Penix. Now, to be fair, Penix in particular is someone who has shown greater accuracy than even a good quarterback. That's maybe his best skill, so it's probably not fair to say, well, he hasn't been as accurate as a Penix, but he is going to need to execute that offense the way that DeBoer wants him to, probably be more accurate than he was last year. Can he do that? Will be interesting to see. All right, so I wanted to get into a quote here. It's a 9-year-old quote. Remember, get your way back machine and think about the cost of attendance debate. Remember this? The cost of attendance thing was a chance for schools to give players a little bit more money, because schools have a rate that they calculate for the full cost of attendance. And common sense would tell you full cost of attendance, meaning more than just tuition, more than just books, it costs more for gas, for example. It costs more for food if you are going to UCLA than it does if you're going to the University of Arkansas. That's just kind of common sense. So it was designed to be a way that schools, since they already calculate what this number is, schools could give the players enough money to at least get them to full cost of attendance beyond what their scholarships were. And it wasn't the same figure, because it couldn't be the same figure. And Nick Saban was one of the coaches who came out and said, oh, it should be a standardized figure. Well, it couldn't be. The whole point was the schools want the cost to be as low as possible. They're trying to land students to come to the school. So they don't want to inflate the number. They want the number to be lower if possible, because most people would like to pay less rather than more for their college experience. But the schools that had higher cost of attendance were going to be able to give a little bit more money to players than those that didn't. And this thing got treated like it was just a crisis. And so we treat you now to a quote from Dabo Swinney. This is from Dabo back in 2015 talking about this quote. I mean, it's a nightmare. I mean, I just think the intent is good because I think we're finally modernizing the scholarship to reflect 2015, but there's some unintended consequences, and there's no question it's not a level playing field. For one school to be able to pay $3,000 or $4,000 more than another school, then at the end of the day, guys are going to make decisions for the wrong reasons, and it shouldn't be that way. I don't like where we are right now. We are where we are, but I think there has to be a better solution somewhere down the road, and I think eventually we're going to get there, but it is where it is right now, and it's going to be a factor in the recruiting process. There's no question. It's a nightmare. It's going to be a factor. There's no question. Well, I have a question. When was the last time you heard anybody say a word about cost of attendance and its impact on recruiting? The answer is about 2015, because they found out real fast, no. If kids were that interested in trying to make a decision based on a school off of money, there were always schools that were going to find them ways to get money below the table. So the extra $3,000 or $4,000 at most above the table, that really wasn't what kids were making their mind up on. And once the coaches realized, while this was better and more fair to give the kids the money to actually, as Dabo put it, modernize the scholarship for 2015, once they found out it wasn't a deal maker or a deal breaker one way or the other, they never said a word about it again. Didn't care. But in 2015, OMG, oh my gosh, crisis, nightmare. How are we going to deal with the fact somebody has $3,800 more to offer than us? Because go figure, it's more expensive to go to some places than it is Clemson. How are we going to deal with that? So while I will certainly concede the point that right now there are some things that are going on that are bigger than that particular controversy was, it's just a reminder, this sport tends to, any step forward, any modernization, any change from what people are used to, it tends to have people freak out and sound alarm bells all the time, which makes it harder to take those same people seriously when they're sounding them, when there might be a bigger problem. It hasn't been a good look for the sport all these different years where it was treated as a crisis. What do you mean I can't block players from transferring to 42 schools because I want to? What do you mean they can go to whatever school they want and get a scholarship and I can't stop them? Oh, it's a crisis. Now, maybe there is a crisis, but nobody wants to hear it because you said everything else was. That's what matters to me today. It's brought to you by thisstuffmatters.net. All right, so we got a couple of minutes left here. Just want to quickly touch on a couple of other things while we've got the shot. Have you heard much about Deion Sanders in Colorado recruiting lately? Speaking of things that you heard a bunch about for a short period of time, and then it's gotten much quieter, I will be real interested to see whether or not they are able to make moves in the transfer portal coming up after April, because it's pretty clear that's where, for better or worse, Deion Sanders intends to build his program. Again, they signed a very small class. Only 7 kids signed with Colorado out of high school. And then we find out this stat from the folks at USA Today, which is kind of amazing. Do you know how many in-home visits Deion Sanders has made as the head coach of the Colorado Buffaloes? Any idea? I mean, you know these coaches. You know what you hear about the recruiting trail and the amount of time they spend on the recruiting trail. So here you are. You're Deion Sanders. You are a celebrity coach that everybody's talking about. How much time do you think you spent in somebody else's house trying to convince them, hey, we need your son to come to Boulder? The answer is zero. Deion Sanders has been on the same number of home visits as a coach for Colorado, as the head coach of the Buffaloes, as you personally have been as the head coach of the Colorado Buffaloes. Now, does that mean that Deion Sanders is doing it wrong? Yeah, not necessarily, I guess. If you're counting on everything coming through the portal and you don't think that you need to make visits to kids' homes, that you could just meet with them when they come to campus and that'll be enough, maybe that works. But it also might reflect why they've had trouble closing with some kids, because if every other coach has come to your place, if even guys who have national championship rings have come to your place and they've eaten mama's cooking and they've seen how you lived and they've talked to you on that level, the fact that you've got one coach that just doesn't do that, it could be, well, he's a star and he stands out and he's different, but it also could just not land well. And I got to wonder whether or not that's a sustainable approach, because you are going to need some high school kids. Seven kids a year is not going to get it done. You're going to need high school kids. Maybe some of it's physical. Deion Sanders has had health issues, so be fair to him on that. But if a year from now he's still at Colorado and the number of home visits is still zero, that's a problem. If you're thinking, oh, we should hire Coach Prime, what would he do with our resources? You better be prepared to know what you're getting. Because if he comes to the Southeast to a school and says, yeah, I don't do home visits, good luck on that. That's not going to work out too well at all. All right. Thanks to you for being here. Thanks to David Holloway for producing this radio program. Chuck Oliver will be back with you tomorrow. We will see you then here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.